Goeiemiddag dames en here, good afternoon. I'm not really used to this kind of thing, so please bear with me. I'm a great looker at art and not a great talker. My prentjies is die belangrikste ding. Maar baie welkom. 'N besondere geleentheid veral om hierdie vrou hier langs my langs haar te sit. Barbara, wonderful. In November verlede jaar is 'n skildery van Gerald Sekoto, die een wat julle daar sien, Vroue in die Platteland, Women in the Country, op 'n kunstveiling vir 'n gesellige bedrag van R3,751,440 verkoop. Dit is 'n baie mooi skildery, gesellige skildery wat bekend van die era wat bekend is as Sekoto se Eastwood periode. As jy mooi kyk na die skildery, so jy sien dit is tegnies selfversekerd en hy kyk na die mense, hy sien die mense in die landskap raak en dit is nou net 'n skyf hierdie, maar jy kry tog 'n idee van die kwaswerk wat hier ingaan. So baie van ons sal dink dat amper R4 miljoen is nie so 'n slegte bedrag vir so uitstekende werk nie. Op dieselfde veiling is dit nog 'n skildery van hom vir R1,477,000 verkoop. En dit beplaas Sekoto onder die topkunstenaars wat veilingverkope betref. Myself dink ek is maar 'n oppervlakkige aanduiding van sy status, maar nietemin, jy weet, mense glo mos als geld is die waarde deesdae. But Marilisa is going to talk a little bit more about that aspect of things. Soos ek sê, tot onlangs was Sekoto nie onder dieselfde name as Stern, Pidneef en Loubser nie, om verskeie redes. En julle sal agterkom met ook nie dieselfde kleur nie. Maar dis hoofsaaklik te danke, en ek probeer regtig dit nie onderbeklemtoon nie, te danke. Sy status onder daai name is te danke aan hierdie vrou langs my, Barbara Lintrop, wat letterlik en figuurlik Sekoto se werk onder die aandag van die Suid-Afrikaanse publiek gebring het. Sy sal wonderlike stories van hom vertel, so ek gaan nie te veel daaroor uitwy nie, behalwe om te sê dat Sekoto reeds in die 40er jare saam met baie van die bekendes in die Kaap uitgestal het. Barbara ken die geskiedenis veel beter as ek. So hy was inderdaad die eerste swart kunstenaar wat in die topgeleedere van Suid-Afrikaanse kuns op daai stadium gewerk het. Heeltemal 'n ander tyd natuurlik, hier voor oorlog en so aan. Maar ons is hierso om rede die boek. Dis 'n boekfees hierdie, so die klem val op hierdie wonderlike publikasie. Phyllis en Pote, originally Shorty en Billy Boy. En dis absoluut te danke aan Barbara dat ons met hierdie publikasie sit. Die Sekoto Stichting, the Sekoto Foundation, has supported this. And it's a magnificent children's book in the sense that it has real cultural value, it has real educational value, and it's really a fantastic thing just to have and to look at. Ek wil julle aanmoedig, ons het die oorspronklike Engelse ene en die splinte nuwe Afrikaanse weergawe, en die boekie is al 11 tale beskikbaar. It's a wonderlike opvoedingsmateriaal, but we'll speak a little bit about the a little bit later. Barbara will tell the story of the book, but ek het nog prentjies van die boek daar in net daai reeks, ja. Just to give you an idea, there's illustrations from the book. En dis belangrik om die goed te sien, want in die lig van Sekoto se werk vandag. Ek weet nie of ek genoem het nie. Eergisteraand is daar een van sy skilderye by Strauss & Company verkoop vir ek dink ook 1.5 of so iets miljoen en die skildery so groot soos die boek. Die donkiekar. Soos ek sê, Barbara gaan vir ons die storie vertel van Filies en Pote, maar eers gaan Marlise vir ons die konteks gee van vandag Sekoto in die kunstmark, want ek dink dit is 'n baie belangrike aspek van sy waarde in ons kulturele soort van lewe. Marlise.
Dankie Melvin. Okay, ons kan oorgaan na die ander folder toe. My naam is Marlise, ek is van Aspire Art Auctions en ek het 'n verskriklike lekker werk. Ek werk met kuns en ek verkoop kuns en ons doen navorsing oor kuns. So mense kan sê ek het my koek gekry en ek eet dit aan beide kante. En maar ek wil so oorsig gee van Gerard Sekoto se ontvangs en hoe die Suid-Afrikaanse publiek hom gesien het en ook wat die resultate op die mark was. Hy het vir die eerste keer toe hy Johannesburg toe getrek het, hy het in Sophiatown gaan bly in 1939, het hy vir die eerste keer by die Gainsborough Galleries uitgestal. En dit is dieselfde jaar wat hy na Johannesburg toe gekom het. Juist na hierdie uitstalling het hy redelike bekendheid verwerf onder die Johannesburgse kunsliefhebbers. Dit was ook in daardie jaar wat twee van sy werke aanvaar is vir die uitstalling by die Suid-Afrikaanse Akademie. Dit was 'n uitstalling vir kontemporêre Suid-Afrikaanse kuns op daardie tyd. So teen 1940 het hy redelik publieke erkenning geniet vir sy werke, soos genoem veral onder die kunsgemeenskap in Johannesburg, wat daardie tyd as 'n mens kan sê 'n progressiewe Joodse gemeenskap was. So 1940 was 'n groot jaar vir Sekoto gewees. Dit was toe die Johannesburgse kunsgalery een van sy werke aangekoop het en dit is hierdie werk wat julle op die skyfie sien, getiteld Yellow Houses Sophiatown. Dit is ook gedateer 1940. Nou dit was nogal groot nuus gewees. Dit was die eerste keer dat 'n publieke museum in Suid-Afrika die werk van 'n swart kunstenaar aangekoop het. Daardie tyd die stigtingsbeleid van die museum was ook geweest dat hulle slegs werke van internasionale standaard sal aankoop. So hulle het nog nie regtig Suid-Afrikaanse blanke kunstenaars aangekoop nie, maar wel Sekoto se werke aangekoop. En soos genoem, het was die eerste keer dat 'n swart kunstenaar in 'n publieke museum in Suid-Afrika opgeneem is en dit was hierdie werk was tot en met die 1980s die enigste werk deur 'n swart kunstenaar in die Johannesburgse kuns museum se permanente versameling. Maar kort daarna, tussen weer in 1941 en 1942, is sy werke weer aangesluit by die Suid-Afrikaanse Akademie en hy sou dan nou natuurlik jaarliks deelneem aan hierdie groot uitstalling totdat hy Suid-Afrika vir Parys verlaat het in 1948. Wat vir my interessant was ook, veral met baie swart kunstenaars, dat 'n mens 'n storie gaan sien van dat hulle werke verskriklik baie afgeskeep was en dat hulle werke nie gesien was nie. Die geval met Sekoto het ek nogal gesien was eintlik anders. Sedert 1939 het hy eintlik heel gereeld, amper elke jaar uitgestal. Nie groot solo uitstallings nie, maar hy was altyd in groepsuitstallings ingesluit. En hy het baie in Johannesburg uitgesal en dan ook in die Kaap toe hy hierheen getrek het in 1942. En soos Melvin genoem het, het hy ook betrokke geraak by die nuwe groep. En dit was nou 'n groep kunstenaars waaronder Gregoire Boonzaier, Walter Battes, Lippie Lipschitz. So hy het saam met hulle ook in die Kaapse galerye uitgestal. In 1947 het hy weer 'n baie groot solo-uitstalling by die Gainsborough Galleries in Johannesburg gehad en dit het vir hom redelike finansiële sukses gegee en kort daarna weer in Pretoria by die Christie's Gallery en dit het hom in 'n finansiële posisie geplaas om voor te berei om Suid-Afrika te verlaat. Natuurlik weens die sosio-politieke situasie en oor dat hy wen oor die rassespanning natuurlik. So, op die ouderdom van 33 trek Sekoto toe Frankryk toe en na Parys toe En hy het nogal redelik vroeg ook uit met die regte mense gemeng daar. Hy was ook, hy het ook as 'n musikant gewerk in die kroeg en die French cafes. So hy het gou-gou betrokke geraak by die kunsgemeenskap in Parys en hy het weer eens vinnig lof gekry vir sywerke en ook aan groepsuitstallings deelgeneem. Sy eerste solo uitstalling in Parys was natuurlik in 1949 gewees. Maar wat baie interessant was, 'n jaar voor dit was hierdie werk wat getitel is Sixpence a Door, ingesluit in 'n groot internasionale uitstalling getitel Contemporary South African Painting, Drawings and Sculpture. Dit het oopgemaak by die Tate Galerie in Londen, waarna dit vir, getrek het en gereis het na België, Nederland, Frankryk, Kanada en die VSA. En dit is nou nogal 'n interessante storie dat die koningin het 'n baie positiewe aanmerking gemaak op hierdie werk. Sy het baie van die werk gehou en dit het natuurlik die koerante gehaal die volgende dag en toe vir Sokoto ook weer in die kollig geplaas daarna. Dit is ook net belangrik om te noem dat sedert hierdie uitstallinge het hy ook weer gereeld uitgestal in Parys. Hy het ook weer uitgestal in Pretoria in 1950, ook 1952 by die Van Riebeeck fees en 1973 by die Pretoria Kunsmuseum. Maar wat interessant is van hierdie spesifieke werk, Sixpence at the Door, wat nou by hierdie groot internasionale uitstalling gewys het, is dat dit het verkoop in 1991 vir R186,000. Dit was toe 'n rekordprys vir 'n lewende Suid-Afrikaanse kunstenaar en wat ek dink nogal besonders is as 'n mens ook kyk na die kulturele konteks waarin al hierdie goed gebeur het. Maar interessante ding, alhoewel hy redelik plaaslik en internasionaal uitgestal het, het ons sosio-politieke omstandighede in Suid-Afrika daartoe gelei dat sy kunsnalatenskap en dit wat hy gedoen het, was afgeskeep gewees. En ongelukkig het die mark ook gevolg. Die mark werk altyd gelyk met wat in die kulturele wêreld aangaan. So dit was tot en met die laat 80s met die verskyning van Barbara se boek natuurlik oor Sokoto se werk en 'n retrospektiewe uitstalling by Jack wat sy werke weer in die kolle geplaas het en daar het die mark weer gevolg. En so daar kan ons sien, dit is ons werk van al hierdie verkoopsindekse af, ons werk op die sekondêre mark, wat beteken alle werke wat verkoop word op hierdie mark, word gepubliseer, die resultate word gepubliseer, so dit is beskikbaar vir ons om na te kyk. Ons kan daar sien, sy mark is redelik sterk, soos Melvin ook genoem het, en sy werk is hoogs versamelbaar sedert die vroeë 1990s. Melvin het ook genoem dat dit bring Sokoto onder die top versamelbare kunstenaars. Ek het gisteraand gekyk na die 2016 African Art Market Report en onder die top 100 moderne kunstenaars van Afrika staan Sokoto op nommer 50, wat 'n baie, baie goeie posisie is. 2017 alleen wys dat Sokoto dat daar 22 werke van Sokoto op die mark verhandel het, internasionaal en plaaslik. En die waardes waarvoor sy werke verhandel, wissel van tussen 150,000 tot natuurlik 3.3 miljoen, soos wat ons gesien het die laaste uitslag was laas jaar. Ek wil net 'n paar hoogtepunte noem. Hierdie was sy selfportret geskilder in 1946 of 47 en dit het ook groot nuus gemaak in 2006. Dit was die eerste keer dat een van Sokoto se werke oor 'n miljoen rand verkoop het. Hierdie werk het in Londen verkoop deur Bonhams en die verkoopsprys daardie tyd was 1.3 miljoen rand gewees. Hierdie werk is getiteld Yellow Houses District 6 en dit hierdie werk hou tans die rekord vir die hoogste prys betaal van Sokoto se werke. Dit was verkoop in 2011 vir 5.8 miljoen op daardie stadium 602 000 pond. Die huidige waarde is geskat op 9.9 miljoen, so dit is die rekord vir Sokoto se werke. Die tweede plek word natuurlik ingeneem deur hierdie werk waarna Melvin ook verwys het, wat laas jaar in Suid-Afrika verhandel het en wat vir 3.3 miljoen rand verkoop het. Dit is 'n huidige Suid-Afrikaanse rekord vir die kunstenaar. Dankie. I'm giving. Yeah, so you can give the cultural
context.
May
I speak in English? Sure. Least I knew what Marilise was talking about, but I was a bit bemused by what you spoke about. I've had to get my ear tuned. Just to add to what Marilise said, of course, there's the private market that no one knows about. And for instance, Self-Portrait, I know, sold quite a long time ago for 7 million. And there are other ones that have been selling for more than what you actually pick up on these market graphs. It appears that the private market is very popular because you can sell and you don't have to pay the commissions. You can wheel and deal. Absolutely. But I know we're here today to talk about Shorty and Billy Boy, which is a great passion of mine, and I did understand a little bit of what Melvin was saying. We made it specially because we all know the education problems here are probably the biggest problem that we have in this country. If we could just be educated, the world would be open for everyone's opportunities. There's a really interesting article in today's Daily Maverick about Malema when he owned his farm, and some people went up and photographed him very proudly. He had actually paid for the farm. However he paid for it isn't in the article, but he had paid, I think it was 5 million, and then when all the court cases with Zuma getting him out of politics came into play, he ended up being forced in order to pay the taxes and to settle with SARS. He had to sell his farm that sold the most magnificent cabbages and tomatoes for 2.5 million. And the point of the article is there is this enormous population of people who have no opportunity. And this whole thing now about land goes back into the article that I'm actually not here to tell you about that. But it made me think even more about Shorty and Billy Boy, because the two institutions for whom it was made, the Department of Basic Education, but also for the Department of Education, because it deals with art, looking at art, how you look at art, they haven't bought one book. That's not quite true. The Department of Basic Education ordered 300 copies on trial. We've never heard from them again. And I haven't ever met anyone who actually knows about the book who should know about it. So it's just very depressing, because it came back in the suitcase of the estate of late Gerard Sokoto. It took 7 years to get the estate back. It's a long story, and
I think you need to tell that story.
But it's a long one.
Well,
I'll tell it at the end.
It's interesting because it has to do with intercultural exchanges and all kinds of things.
Yes, so. And actually when we got the taxes waived, which is the best part of the story, and it's all about who you know in everything in life, and if you don't know them, you get to know them and you lobby and you fight if you feel about something strongly enough, which I did. I got to know his niece, and he left her a legacy. And I just realized that she wouldn't get the legacy unless we got the estate back. And Gerard had lived on Social Security from 1949. He emigrated in exile in 1947. And things just went pear-shaped, as Marilise pointed out. He was actually very famous here. He was often in Die Bild when he was in Cape Town. Walter Battis invited him to join the new group. Alexis Preller gave Sokoto his first box of oil paints. Judith Gluckman taught him how to use oils, and he learned that within 6 weeks. And you can actually see it in the early watercolours, which we're going to show in a minute, to the very first oil painting and how quickly he mastered oil painting. So it was within 6 months that he went from making his first sort of awkward oil, the one that you refer to that sold at Strauss for 1 million, more or less, the other day, is quite awkward in that actually one of the auction houses, contacted me and said, was I happy about that painting? And I immediately said, I actually knew the original owner of it. But it was awkward enough that even a very experienced eye because there's another aspect that goes on, which are all the fakes. There are lots and lots of fakes. But to get back to this, living on Social Security, by the time he died in 1993, he was very wealthy, maybe not by French standards, by his own standards, because the first book I published was in 1988. He had over a million French francs in his account, which he hadn't told the French anyone about, but he did have bank accounts. And when the government realized that there was this amount of money, they immediately impounded his estate because he hadn't paid social taxes and all the other things you've got to do in France. So began the battle. And I even asked President Mandela via his very close friend and a close friend of mine, Amina Khachalia. He agreed he would take a letter to President Mitterrand when he was going over to meet and do whatever you do when you're a president. And the interior minister, who was then Simon Veil, went to the notaries in Nogent-sur-Marne, which is where Sokoto was. That's another long story. And they stamped the file because the French invented the word bureaucracy, and it made it absolutely impossible. So two other French ambassadors came and went, and Mandela retired and Mbeki came in. Well, I didn't know him, couldn't get to him, but I got to know the next French ambassador. Somebody whispered in my ear, he and President Chirac had been very close friends when they were little boys growing up in the same village, both aristocrats, I may add. And this particular ambassador was very remote. He wasn't like some of the friendly ones who came in under the socialist Mitterrand government. So it was very difficult to get to know him, but I managed that. And approached him and said, would he not speak to President Chirac, who was now coming to meet President Mbeki? So he was prepared to hear the whole saga. And everything went quiet until I got an email, no, a fax in those days. I couldn't believe my eyes that the finance minister in France was Dominique Strauss-Kahn. And we all know about him, apropos of Reedy's talk a little earlier. And he waived the taxes on the estate Sokoto, which meant that it could come back to South Africa. It was much more complicated than that. It's the only other time that I know about where the French government has waived taxes, and that was on the Picasso estate, where they said they'd build the famous Picasso Museum and the family would give some of the art, and the deal was done. So it was a very exciting and important moment for us. The estate eventually came back. It comprised a little suitcase, and funny enough, there is a drawing in one of the books that I've been involved in publishing, a very simple little drawing of a man, artist, holding a suitcase asking the way to Park Station, which was the autobiographical little drawing of Sokoto going to Park Station, asking the way to come down to Cape Town to take the Carnarvon Castle to England, which is how he left. And in the suitcase, it was the same little suitcase, you can see the proportions, was over 300,000 little sketches, extraordinarily important documents, letters, all sorts of things. Plus, there were some very big canvases. And the French government had said, in order to bring it back, it must be a fondation. So that's how we got the foundation bit. And you'll see now everyone's got a foundation. But I can tell you, in 1995, no one had a foundation. They had trusts. And they wanted it to go to an institution, which is why we chose the Iziko South African National Gallery Museum. We had the best and only decent Minister of Arts and Culture we've ever had, Bridget Mabandla. She went out of her way to help. But when it came to the legacy, because of course that million francs went, it went on tax, it went to the old age home where he hadn't paid anything, it went to the notaries, those miserable little notaries who wouldn't let go of their files in Nogent-sur-Marne. So, and Gerard had been buried, my husband and I, and we had had some incredible friends who managed to raise air tickets so that some of the family could go to his funeral. He had been buried, but he didn't have a headstone. So the last bit of money, we asked, could we make a headstone? We got the family involved, and we made a very beautiful headstone in marble that now covers his grave. Sadly, I don't think a lot of people ever go to visit him, but we always try here when we go to Paris, in Nogent-sur-Marne. That's another long story. I have to skip it to get back to the point. So Bridget Mabandla said, well, the government, the South African Department of Art and Culture, that stage, I think it hadn't gone back to... It had come out of science and technology, and it was now a single... Gloomy news is we believe that it's now going to be put back into sports and soccer and rugby. But at that stage, it was a single standalone department, and the money for the niece was given actually by the South African government. And then no one was allowed to know, because as Bridget Mabandla said, we'll have our door being knocked on every second of the day with people coming to ask for legacies. And so this came back. The suitcase initially came to me, and I had lots of time to go through it and actually see what there was. Mandy van der Spee, who's been an extraordinary person within the arts world, working for Standard Bank, looking after that Standard Bank whole arts program for years, gave 10,000 rand for the whole collection to be written up by a young MA student. And in opening up the suitcase, there were the musical compositions of Sokoto that he had. I've always argued, and you can see it in his work, that he was a musician before he became an artist. His father was a proselytizing missionary working for the Lutheran Mission Station and had been sent up to Limpopo. So we found these incredible little musical compositions and a four-page foolscap, which comprised Shorty and Billy Boy. And when he turned 100, of course he was in heaven, but for his 2013 exhibition that we, the Gerard Sokoto Foundation trustees, wanted to put on to celebrate his centenary, I said, wouldn't it be nice to give him a birthday present? So we took our four pages off the Shorty and Billy Boy. I have a daughter-in-law who's known as Beagle-Eyed Beth. She's one of the top editors in the country. And she spent, there's her little editor's note at the back, she spent hours taking something that he had made in 1973, maybe for a friend's child that actually never went to the child, and turned it into our Shorty and Billy Boy. If you want to get a book published, you've actually got to write on your computer and you've got to submit your background and all that stuff. I'm sure you all know about it. And the publishers have a look, and if they like you, they contact you. If they don't like you, that's it. So I went to a launch of Zapero's cartoons at Exclusive because I knew the owner or the head of Jacana was going to be there. And when the whole thing was over, I bounced over to her and said, hi, I'm Barbara Lindop, and blah, 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 blah. And I think she just wanted to get rid of me, and she said, well, come and see me. And so that's how we got a sort of formal publisher, because my first book I had to self-publish, and it was a nightmare. And then I'd applied to the lottery. Most people apply to the lottery and never hear from them. But we applied so many times, and thanks to Gerard Sokoto, the one skill I've really got are my writing skills. I have decided if I were to say what's my best thing, I would say I take something out of absolutely nothing and I have to convince somebody else, but that's been thanks to him. And then the French Institute were simply amazing. We knew the senior partner of Bowman Gilfillan and Blacklock, and again at a cocktail party I bounced over to him and somehow talked him into helping to fund the book. And Terby Foundation came on board when they said, would we do 100 copies only in Sepedi, which is northern Sotho, as opposed to Sotho. And they went to the Terby Foundation educational projects. And again, I think that's important because you can't do this without like-minded people who help fund. Then what really was important for me was I wanted young readers to understand. I remember being at school and I was always so bored. being taught something, how very difficult it is to draw something like that. It looks so easy, but when you actually try to copy it, it isn't so easy. And just to understand, while you're plowing through the words and learning to read, that some people have a talent that I certainly don't have, and a lot of people, in that the book was aimed at learning to read, so you'll see that the text is the perfect, you know, that is decided by the publishers who know. Learning to look at art and learning to find out who this iconic figure is. There's the self-portrait that changed hands privately for $7 million. So there's a little background there of who he is. And then we thought, and the history that Marylise has touched on. And then we gave a little story at the back about the Gerard Sokoto Foundation, which is completely misunderstood. The white bourgeois who appropriated Gerard Sokoto and made millions out of him isn't true at all. It's actually been a very enervating, impoverishing in all kinds of ways project. The story itself is simply enchanting. It's sort of got a moral. If you're dishonest, Zuma should read this book. You get punished. And Mr. Cock is very smart. He is the husband of the very dim Mrs. Hen, who falls for Shorty, who is a naughty boy, and Billy Boy is a little more honourable. So it's a wonderful story. I think it actually appeals to me enormously as an adult. All my grandchildren assure me that it's one of the best books they've ever read, but I'm sure if they said something else, they would be sorry. So there is Billy Boy being marched off to prison, and Shorty actually manages. So it's actually Billy who is the naughty one. I gave you the wrong information. That wonderful image of the cow, who is just a passing character within the book. There is another version of the cow, which is in the National Gallery collection. And in all of Gerard's exile work, you see him looking back at his sort of South African upbringing, and certainly the Limpopo experience, because he began in Botshabelo in Middelburg as a little boy. His father was then sent to Limpopo in order to convert the pagans. The pagans are mainly the Indibele, and there's a very wonderful early image of the Indibele women. There's all Shorty and Billy Boy images. Are they coming up? Gerard was riveted by the pagans, the Indibele, because they were over the hill, and they weren't allowed to. Oh, now this is a very early watercolor, dated at about 1938. Let me just find it. I just wanted to. I had discussed over the internet with Melvin. Everybody knows Song of the Pick and Sixpence a Door because they're the really famous paintings. But having just touched on the 3,000 images that we've got in the National Gallery, there's another collection that's at WAM, the Wits Art Museum, which then was the Wits Art Galleries. When I published the first book, Gerard sent me envelopes. The post office used to work in those days. And I got about, I don't know, 100 envelopes, day after day after day after day, of images that he said would I sell on his behalf. The more they came in, the more I thought, these can't be sold, this is our heritage, we must keep it for ourselves. That took me 2 years to sell to an institution, and he got very angry with me. It hasn't been easy, all of this, and accused me of all sorts of terrible, terrible things. At one stage, I'd approached Mr. Oppenheimer, and I would say to my husband, oh, we made a figure, 100,000 rand for this collection of 350 amazing images. And we, Gerard was very happy with the 100,000. I would say to my husband, what's 100,000 to Mr. Oppenheimer? Would it be, and he would say, well, it's about 5 cents. So we would think, well, he'll buy it. He took 6 months to see me. When he did see me, he said, "Why can't I pick what I want?" And I said, "No, you can't do that. It's a collection, and it's like a daily diary, and it's, I had it all in my head." He looked at me, he said, "Would you take your file? And actually, I'm very busy. Would you get out of my office?" I crept out like a little ant, feeling completely miserable. His PA was outside. He knew this was going to happen. He patted me. He said, "Bad luck." So then I got the Argus Group to buy it for Agri Clouster, who was the editor of the Sowetan. He had the nation-building program. And he was accused of being a white man's stooge and all of that sort of stuff. And they bought it for the nation-building program. It ended up at the Wits Art Galleries. Some of these works come out of there. The other ones come out of the National Gallery. But this is a very early watercolor, before he learned to paint oils, when he had just arrived in Sophiatown in 1939. And it's got the freshness of these lovely watercolors. Can we share another one? This shows how his style changed dramatically. He got to Paris. He met a man, Raymond de Cardon, who had a gallery in the Rue des Beaux-Arts. His wife, Elsa Claussen, was his wife who had the gallery. And that was his very first exhibition, 1949. It caused mayhem in Gerard's life. He ended up in the St. Anne's Hospital because the de Cardons were alcoholics. Gerard was 10, sort of beginning to go that way, and they had a terrible fight, and de Cardon said, "I'll call the police." Gerard, who'd come out of the police situation in South Africa, said, "Great, call them." You can imagine the police arrived, and there they were boxing and fighting, and heaven knows what was going on. And the police said, "Il est fou, he's mad." So instead of taking him to the police station and just telling him to behave, they took him to the mental home. 1949, just post-war, you can imagine those black men in Paris. But you can see how he changed his style. Complete. Is that me? Yes. Trying to win the Parisian atmosphere. So the next one. This one, again, is early. I just wanted to show it because it sums up. You can see the whites are in long blue uniforms. The other police are in their little shorts, the old style, the way it was. Again, that freshness. This is a very early one, 1938. That's in the collection. That's in the Sang Ezeko collection. It came back in the suitcase. But again, you get this... Watercolour is a very difficult thing in which to work. So I was just trying to link what is considered to be art compared to this, which is maybe seen. You'll see I've kept on the sticky tape on the A4 just to try to give a tactile sense of what a simple little thing it was that having turned it. What I didn't say was Melvin did. We published it in 7 languages, including French. And the French Institute and the Alliance Française, 2 men, Georges Lory and Charles Caudin, translated it into French, and they got that real sort of lower class kind of French slang into their version. The Sutu version won a prize for the best translation in a major competition in Holland. Interesting that they chose the Sutu and they didn't choose the Afrikaans version in Holland.
Can I comment on the Afrikaans translation at this point, seeing that this is a woordfeest? Can I just read to you, I have to pay tribute, talking about the translation, to Alette Krier, who translated this into Afrikaans. And you pointed out how apt the name Shorty and Billy Boy is. If you look at this, you know, this guy could only be Phyllis with that little square thing on, and this can only be Porter with these long legs. I mean, this is just brilliant. But I just want to read the beginning of this, of the story. Lank gelede was daar twee beruchte honde met die name Phyllis en Porter. Hulle het in Groenewels, 'n klein dorpie, gewoon en was bekend as die grootste twee skelms in die dorp. Hulle het alles gesteel waarop hulle gierige pote kon lê, maar eiers kon hulle glad nie weerstaan nie en het elkeen eers gekraak en toe gulsig uitgesuig. And then this lovely story book ends by meneer Haan. Toe meneer Haan hoor dat die honde beloof het om nooit weer iemand anders se goed te steel nie, het hy sy hemp uitgetrek, please note, sy vlekke geklap en so hard as hy kan gekraai. Kwaaks, kwaak, kwaak, koekelekoe. The immediacy of the language to me, die onmiddellike morele aspek, kom van die begin af deur in die boek. Die story is prachtige story vir kinders. Baie van my vriende sê die kinders is, Strijdom van de Merwe sê, sy kinders is mal oor die boek. Het is so direct. And then of course the illustrations, I mean it's just the wonderful way in which it sort of just comes alive on the page.
I think what we've tried to do as the trustees of the Sokoto Foundation is to show that he is our Michelangelo. He is an extraordinary artist. You saw that early work. You saw Sixpence a Door. You probably all know Song of the Pick, the famous ones. In 2002, I put together a band of unknown musicians who we quickly called the Blue Heads. And our CD, it did take 4 years to make it because it was the biggest band, I think, in the world that didn't read music. It was all by ear. And on a Friday, we'd be perfect. On a Monday, we would be absolutely useless. So we'd start all over again. And I would just get more and more funds from all sorts of amazing people who believed in the project. And when we did make our CD 4 years later, we were shortlisted for the SAMA Awards. But the music is very much like Shorty and Billy Boy. It's got, as one aficionado said to me, it's got long legs. And Richard Koch in 2015 had the music, I don't know how you say it, transformed for an orchestra. And it was performed at the Grahamstown Festival to a standing ovation. And then André Leroux at SAMRO got Concord in Cabinde to take our music, but to make it really top-level jazz. And it was performed at the SAMRO International Scholarships Awards, where they were giving prizes for classical and jazz compositions. So we have tried to show our Renaissance man, Gerard Sokoto. The problem is we've got a government who's not the slightest bit interested, and we have no art education in the rural schools and a lot of the lesser schools. Obviously, if you go to a private school, they all do Sokoto for matric, but others don't. And I do a sort of test whenever I go to a garage or go to shop at Pick and Pay. I'll say to whomever I'm paying, have you heard of Gerard Sokoto? And I usually get ish. So no, we haven't nearly got where we want to be. But I think he is an iconic artist. There are many of his colleagues who haven't been recognized, who languish. Only the few art specialists would know about them. But he deserves, it isn't sort of white patronage or me being the bourgeois, he is an artist. He has work in the Philadelphia Museum. He now recently has some, thanks to, funny enough, Bill Cosby, in the new African Washington Museum. In the African Smithsonian, there's a work that was bought from Veltz several years ago. Slowly his international reputation is growing, and it seems even with William Kentridge, he had to get famous there before he really got famous here. It's sort of one of our problems. Mm.
I think this is why this book to me is also so important. On the back, it's so educational. It gives, you know, the young person who reads this book in any of those languages now immediately makes contact with this iconic artist, you know, and this, it's beautifully summed up, these beautiful paintings at the back. It just struck me now, looking at these paintings, how Sokoto's humanism comes out. Mm. You know, this kind of, I think it's probably all from the 40s, really. You know, they were so passionately romanticizing this humanistic view, you know, the gaze on this. And of course, it recorded a particular kind of life, the township's life, which nobody really did in those days. So this is also extremely valuable. So all in all, a beautiful story, the book, to start off with the moral at the end. Do not steal, do not get corrupted. And then learning about the artist. And important to me, too, that the illustrations are just not simple, but so direct in comparison to something that would sell for 4 or 5 million rand. But thank you, ladies. Thank you, everybody, for
thank
coming.
You.
The book is for sale over there.
Yeah. Thank you, Melvin.
Sorry.
Can I ask you first?
Yes.
When he left, funny enough, his older brother was expelled from the Botticelli Lutheran because he had a fling with a girl, I think. So his father was so angry, he took both sons out and sent them to the Anglican mission school, which was in Polokwane. And from there, they both graduated as teachers. Gerard went to the Chaiso school in Sesheko Township, which, of course, Julius also graduated, as did Desmond Tutu. Mm-hmm. So it's a very famous school. And there was Ernest Mangoba, who you may or may not have heard of, who was slightly older than Gerard. He and Nimrod Ndebele was there as one of the teachers. Injabulo Ndebele, you've probably heard of. He's been the vice-chancellor at UCT for a while. They were all there. So there was this group of highly intellectual aristocrats, really, and from their own family backgrounds. And Ernest said to Gerard, "I'm leaving. I'm going to Paris. It's the center of the world. Come with me." Gerard said, "I can't go. I haven't even left Limpopo." Ernest left. Gerard then, his father died. His father didn't approve of the art. Gerard had been painting and modeling the stuff as a child, and his mother, it's always the mother, encouraged him, and he would do it sort of on the side and secretively. So when he got to the school, he was very much encouraged by Ernest and Nimrod, and he'd allow them to peep over his words, over his shoulder, encourage him. He entered the May Esther Bedford competition of 1938. May Esther Bedford was a very proactive encourager of all things artistic, and he came second. George Pember was the winner. He had been adopted by Anglican missionaries in the Eastern Cape and had been sent to Fort Hare University. So effectively, Gerard was self-taught. Pember had been highly trained. And when you look at the very early Pember works, they are formal and taught. Gerard's watercolours, as you can see, look at this early one. This is at the Witz Art Museum. And you can see his fascination with the initiation at a distance because he wasn't allowed to participate. But even there, the movement of that Nyanga, whoever she is at the front, is simply enchanting. And the rolling hills and the trees of Limpopo, when you go there, you sort of suddenly look at it through his eyes and you think, gosh, that looks like a Sokoto painting. So it was then his father died, 1939. He said, "I'm giving up teaching." And he had a cousin in Sophiatown who offered accommodation, which Yellow Houses, 1940, is the view from where he lived, looking across at the Shebeen, where they would dig holes and put the beer when the police came. And when the police had gone, they would remove the beer and party. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Well, the books are over there. Please buy for your kids.
I want to know if the books in the black languages, are they still for sale?
Yes.
If I want to buy one,
yes.
Process, where would I go?
Well, we have, that's in the process. As you can see, one is no longer so young, so we've been looking for a long time for the Gerard Sokoto Foundation to have a home of longevity where he will be nurtured 500 years like Michelangelo has always been in Italy. And we went to the government for 15 years, we got no go from them. So we were very lucky, we began negotiations a few years ago, and Louis Norville, who's building his magnificent museum outside Steenberg, which opens in end of April, and I see he is now putting on Instagram, if you want to be part of the beginnings of the Norville Museum, go on the website, they've got all sorts of events coming up. And so all the Sokoto, they're doing the management and administration of the foundation. We remain as a separate entity, and the books are going to be in the shop at the Norville Museum from the 28th of April, in all the languages. But they seem to want a new cover. So these are the collector's items. These are the original ones.
Thank you. Yeah, seker. 100% dan doen ek vir jou 'n waardasie.